I was going to speak about living in the two worlds this weekend. And this lovely quote from Abu Sa'id ibn Abu Qayyir as a kind of frame for it. I'm not going to talk about that, but I still want to share the quote, but I'll tell you why. Maybe it will find its way in. The perfect mystic is not an ecstatic devotee lost in the contemplation of oneness, nor a saintly recluse shunning all commerce with mankind. But the true saint goes in and out amongst the people and eats and sleeps with them and buys and sells in the market and marries and takes part in social intercourse and never forgets God for a single moment. Which is just the essence of Sufism, really. Not just the aspiration, but also the goal, but the experience. But I woke up, I don't know, 5 o'clock this morning, and I was just sitting there, and I found myself moving away from wanting to speak about this as directly, and returning to this theme of simplicity and what is essential that I spoke about on New Year's Day. And for those of you who didn't listen to that talk or weren't there, it was in some ways an orientation towards the year ahead. Now the year is drawing to a close, and this year has been a difficult one, and it is only going to get more difficult in the rest of this year and the years ahead, as the election in America has only pointed out more directly. And the talk was about how to stay oriented with what really matters and how to live simply, inwardly and outwardly. And at the root of what simplicity is, for me anyway, is essentiality, what is essential. And even framing how we think of what is simple. What do we need? What possessions? What experiences? It's really more what is essential to our lives. Our outer lives and our inner lives. And how are we holding that? And so I want to return there and perhaps speak a little bit more deeply about this, both in the context of what will unfold in the coming months. There's a great deal of uncertainty around what will unfold. Even here in Europe and the UK, that we felt differently than where I live, but it will be felt. And as was shared yesterday, you know, this is an incredibly toxic time, perhaps the most toxic time ever. And it is not something you can ignore. To be incredibly conscious of how toxic it is at this time and how that can impact every aspect of your life. Outer life, inner life, your emotional self, your psychic body, your spiritual body, physical body, all of it can be impacted. And one has to take that into consideration. And use the discernment that comes with consciously looking at what in your life you need and what in your life you don't. What is essential and what must be protected. Because protection is perhaps more and more important. not isolation, not turning away from the world, because we cannot do that. But how do you protect yourself while being in the world as we live our lives? And not let it compromise the inner mystical journey that is unfolding inside of us. And of course, simplicity and essentiality are nothing new. In fact, the very beginning of the journey, one has a choice to make when one turns towards God, this moment of tawbah, and one has to decide, is this essential? Because it is both not a choice and a choice. The Beloved looks upon you, and you look back, and you turn away. They say turn away from the world, but really it is turning away from being caught in the experience of the world as you experienced it before, as a worldly experience rather than a divine experience in worldly form. It's a big distinction. And the Beloved turns towards you, and you turn towards the Beloved. And at that moment, there is a choice. Does this matter? Enough for me to turn away from the familiar, to embrace the unknown. And one makes a choice that this is something that is essential. It is essential for the heart. It is essential for the soul. And that becomes the pole. That orientation of looking towards the Beloved becomes your orientation, your pole, that all the other choices of what is essential are really built around. It's like that is the central pole, and the other choices are pegs that create a container, a vessel for you to live in the world without being swayed by the world, and to contain the inner process of transformation that unfolds. The pole, the orientation towards God, the pegs, the choices one makes in one's life to honor that. And some of those are prescribed by this path, and some of those are individual choices. For example, the practices, they are pegs. That becomes essential. Remembrance becomes essential. To go inside the heart in silent prayer and meditation becomes essential. And they help orient you towards this pole of always not losing sight of the gaze of the one you want to return home to in a complete offering of oneself. And some of the pegs, they are outer choices. And those are so individual, depending on who you are and what your life is and the responsibilities you have. And this is a path of tremendous freedom. We do not impose very many rules or guidelines. It is up for the individual to make those choices. What your life should be like if you want to always be oriented towards the Beloved. And so, simplicity, essentiality, they are ultimately about taking responsibility. What do I need? What do I not need? What is a distraction? What is unnecessary? And also, what must I keep about my life? What is essential to my nature? And there is a whole level of discernment that must unfold within that as well. What is essential to my circumstance, to my profession, to my familial responsibilities? What is essential to my soul outside of this orientation towards the Beloved? You see, because all of these choices one makes, they create the container. In the past, in this tradition, when it was held within an Islamic framework, Sharia was that container in many ways. Going to the mosque 5 times a day was that container. Certain practices and prayers, they formed that container. It was like the religious form was the outer wall of the garden that then allowed you to enter the inner garden, which was the garden of the soul, the garden of the heart, the real essence of Islam. But as this tradition moved away from that framework, it became much more organic and fluid. And this container became something what was very individual, several core pieces. Like I said, the inner orientation towards God, towards your teacher, towards the energy of the path, the pegs of one's practice, of one's remembrance, of one's prayer, of one's meditation. Yes, adab, the principles, these basic foundational ways that this tradition is held. They form part of the container, but the other pieces are yours. And they are not made for you. You work with your life. You take responsibility for your life. You discern what it means to be a mystic as you are in the space that you are, the place that you are. And that only becomes more important when the world becomes so toxic. Because in the past, you could make choices and have more freedom to make mistakes because there wasn't a constant barrage of toxicity beating down your door, invading your very being in every form, in every sense. And inwardly, barraging you. Always this toxicity. So perhaps what even 10 years ago, maybe 5 years ago, definitely when I was a child, it was so different. It wouldn't impact you as much, but now it's a very different story. And as we spoke about yesterday, it comes across in very challenging ways. How to be present with the crisis, how to be present and attentive to those who are crying out in pain, in human and more than human form, and also to not get completely absorbed in that where one is taken away from attending to what is most essential. There are, in some ways, no easy choices. It is not black and white. And it is individual because each of us are so different. Our sensitivity levels are different. What it takes for us to be contained is different. Some of us live simple, solitary lives as introverts. Some of us are vicarious extroverts. Okay, very few of us are vicarious extroverts, but maybe there is
a life that is much fuller with children and work and responsibilities. And, you know, so it is so unique. So what is simple for one person is not for another, because it is not possible. But it is less about how the form of simplicity makes itself known to you when you begin to discern what matters. It is the intention and the choices and where it comes from. Because that itself creates a tremendous clarity. If one really truly cares about this pull, this orientation towards God, and you make your choices in relation to that, there will be a natural selection process. And it doesn't mean that you don't take the human needs to account, because you are a human being making this journey back to God. And just as Abu Sa'id says, this journey is made in the midst of life, because it is not just the saint who lives like this. It is the aspirant who lives like this. We live like this as we make the journey towards the goal, in the midst of life, in the marketplace, buying and selling. Not lost in the ecstatic nature of oneness, which is less of an issue these days. Not lost in the ecstatic nature of our own psychological neurosis. So I was reading Sir Hindi recently, who's really one of our ancestors, the Mujahideen, the aspect of our tradition is from him, and he is writing, complaining about how so many of his disciples are lost in what he says is a very low stage of the journey, which is the ecstatic oneness intoxication of God. And they are lazy, he says, because they are stuck at this low stage. And it just puts things in perspective, doesn't it? It's put things in perspective, the times we are in. So he had devised a whole range of practices to make sure that these lazy students of his, as he called them, would be able to go beyond this, to experience what he would call a high state, the absolute in a different form. But what it means is that we are not lost in this idea of being a mystic as well. That we are practical mystics. We live our lives and we know the value of what the world brings us. It is not a place to escape from, it is a place to participate in. But how do we do that in the times we are in? And we have to take stock and we have to be very honest and look around. And maybe for some, it is saying, I cannot look at the news in the same way anymore. Or one has to be judicious. Very careful. It is not a running away from the responsibility of what it means to be a mystic in the world, to be honest about what you have the capacity to hold and take. And I say that because I think for many people it can be a rub. And you have to look at what you need to do to hold on to what is essential. But also you must acknowledge that what is essential and what you must choose, it changes. It is not a static experience. Nothing is a static experience. Even the orientation of your gaze, this pole of your existence, is not a static experience. It is an orientation, and it changes, and it draws you closer, and it spins you around. It is most certainly not static. When you come to the path, perhaps what is essential is going to be very different than what it might be 5 years later. Perhaps the first few years, what is essential is to heal. We come so broken from the world so often. And how can we give ourselves fully to our beloved if we are broken? So maybe what is essential for the first few years is really to heal, to breathe, to take in love, to work with love. Yes, it is always an offering to the beloved because you are offering your healing so that you can give yourself to the beloved. You are not just healing for your sake, your own sake, your own self. It changes, it shifts. And perhaps what is unfolding in the world now will be a stage where one has to be more attentive, more careful, and maybe it will change. Part of me fears not. But we also just must be embracing of the moment. We are practical mystics. We are not running away from the world and saying that our love will heal all things. The world is the world. It isn't fair. It's incredibly cruel. And yet there is a choice we have to make. Do we want what is happening in the world to compromise what is most essential? Or do we want to find a way to be with the world as it is and recognize who we are as human beings and who we are as mystics and make the choices we need to? It is basic spiritual understanding that we should always carry only what we need in this life. Always carry only what we need. That is the same now as it was hundreds, thousands of years ago. What you need. What you need is different for each person. You live by yourself, you need very little. You have a family of four, you need more. You have parents who need your help. You have chosen a profession that is of service. The list goes on. And one can also use, I always think about what is the opportunity present at every time an outer situation in the world changes so drastically. What is the opportunity there for further orienting to what really matters? For becoming more discerning? Because because there are always choices to be made at these junctures. That's why I love this story, which I've told many times, about when Genghis Khan was raging his way westward. And he came upon a town, and there was a Sufi master and his students, and they said, "What should we do?" And he said, "I've trained you to be ducks, now swim." Because we have within us, as mystics, as part of our training, but also part of who we are, this capacity to actually learn to deal with things that are almost impossible to deal with. Because as I said yesterday, the difference between spirituality and mysticism, the spiritual practitioner stands by the fire and warms their hands and feels good. And the mystic throws themselves on the fire and burns. And so if we are going to throw ourselves on the fire, then we have the capacity to deal with things that are very hard. Like the destruction of the self, the desolation of the ego, the pain of longing, the pain of loneliness, the pain of living in a world without reflection in the way we want. So we have within us this capacity. But even then, we must make choices. But you know, even without anything in the world impacting us, we would still have to constantly return to what is essential. Because if one does not, one so easily is led astray. It is not that initial choice that you make as you turn towards the Beloved and say, "I want to give myself to Thee." We think that is the moment of awakening. That is just the beginning. It is the daily affirmation of that that slowly shifts us away from being wayfarers on the path of intent to real mystics, committed no matter what to burning on the fire. And now it is so easy to be led astray, more so than before, because this toxicity, it can work with all the base elements of our own lower nature. You know, Sir Hindi, in his letters 400 years ago, he complains about his disciples' egos. They are not just lazy, caught in the ecstatic oneness of God, but they are also just endlessly caught in their ego and their nafs, right? It's refreshing to just read that, you know, teachers have been complaining about the same things for hundreds of years. Not much changes, right? But what has changed is what used to be a simpler drama of the ego having to fall away without necessarily this constant barragement of a toxic world. I mean, I guess, yes, there were hordes of Mongols making their way through Central Asia, but it was different. And the toxicity is so profound and so corruptive that if we aren't protective of our inner and outer lives, it finds its way in. It's like the cockroach that can get in. And then it can work with all the negative patterns that are unfolding within the process of you transforming, right? As you become more and more aware of your ego and the way it has a grip on you, and it can add a potency to things. It is just so corruptive. And so what once was a very challenging process, you know, just like the ox herding pictures in the bathroom, of having to train and deal with our lower nature, or in Sufism, it's the donkey. Maybe you've seen this pictures of Nasruddin making his way from the marketplace of life and finding the footsteps of the donkey and then having to chase the donkey and try to ride the donkey, and the donkey throws Nasruddin off. And slowly, Nasruddin tames the donkey. And there is no donkey. And there is no Nasruddin. And then Nasruddin's back in the marketplace, just like Abu Sa'id. That cycle, which is the process of the dissolution of the self, annihilation, fana, the ego fades away. That process becomes so much harder when there is a world of toxicity creeping in. So the choices you make, what is essential, that becomes a protective shield that wasn't needed in the past. You know, and I've spoken about this in many ways over the years, because this is not new. We've gone through cycles of toxicity. In the last quarter century, it has become so intense. But this is different. And it is different what just has happened. And there is much more of an unknown of what is to come. And so we have to be more diligent. What is essential? The same process that we would always be unfolding within continues. We are searching for the donkey. We are trying to tame the donkey. We are riding the donkey. The donkey is gone. We are gone. We are back in the marketplace. That continues. It continues. But it continues in the world as the world is now. And we are not running to bunkers or taking extreme action outwardly. We each make choices in our own lives according to what we need to do to stay in alignment with what is essential and honor the responsibilities and commitments that we have in this life. The worst thing we could do is pack up, quit our job, and run off to some ashram or forest hut. At least this year. Next year it could be different. One day at a time. Who knows? Seriously. But that's not our way. The Sufi way is not to run away from the world. It is how to be with the world. And it's a messy world. It's a very messy world. How to be with it. Because the mystic does have a role in the world. This is also the essence of our tradition. I spoke about this in the summer. In the context of this journey of you coming into relationship with your own divine nature, becoming pregnant with God, creating a vessel in your heart for the beloved to have their presence in this world, praying through you. This whole journey you go through of taming the donkey, of polishing the mirror of the heart, it is not for yourself. To be in the market, always remembering God, that is an act of servanthood. When one is no longer in the grip of the ego, you know, this state of baka that comes after fana, it is not journeying into the cosmic realms, my friends. You don't just suddenly get rid of the ego and ascend the mountain and pick up your position on the mantle of greatness. No. Life continues as it was, and you are present in two realities, and you are a vessel for the love of God to be present in a more direct way. That's what being, you know, what they would say is a wali, a saint. To be a human being who is present always inwardly with God, completely devoted in a space of servanthood. That is what the Sufi aspires to. And that will never change. But like everything in this journey, it is not a straight line. It is more like a spiral, which means that the experience one goes through as you make this journey inward, because it is inward, even if it is in the world, it is inward, of letting go of the self, one's true self becoming known to you, and then living that in service to God. It means that you experience things along the way. That's why they have this distinction between states and stages. Because one can have these moments where you are this mirror of reflection of love for the divine without it becoming a stage. Your journey is this spiral. There are moments again and again where you get to live, maybe fleetingly, a taste of what is to come. Sometimes it is a second, sometimes it is a day, sometimes it can be a month. And your contribution is made known to you. Because there is something different present. It's like maybe it's not just about you and your process for that moment, that day. There was a taste of something else. And you understood this bridge between the worlds. And then you go back to yourself, and back to the nafs, and back to the donkey. And you keep going. So that one actually experiences what it means to be a Sufi as one makes the journey towards what it really means to be a Sufi. It is a gradual process. And it is nice sometimes to turn, at least for me, to our tradition and the richness of it, to help us stay oriented, to remember that we have always valued being present here, not lost in this world, present in this world, but not a prisoner of it. A witness, a participant, but not owned by it. And that even our aspirations are never to be removed from it. That's why there's this lovely saying about a man from Mount Lokam who came to visit Sari. And he said, "The Sheikh from Mount Lokam greets you." And Sari said, "He dwells in the mountains, so his efforts amount to nothing." A man ought to be able to live in the midst of a market and be so preoccupied with God that not for a single instance he is absent from God. It's the same as Abu Sa'id. But it's just this notion that someone who has reached some reality and then goes and lives on a mountaintop is a great person. The Sufi challenges that. The great person who lives in the midst of life. Because that is where one contributes in the midst of life. As a seeker and as a saint. It is no different. It is no different. And the needs change and the time changes. We have to work with that. And I don't want to offer my set of what I think people should do at this time, set of rules or guidelines. Because that means, one, they may not really be applicable because they're too one-dimensional, but rather to take responsibility and to use it as a space to be mature, to deepen your maturity and discernment and look at your own life and really decide what matters and how you want to embody that. And what are the choices you can make and the choices that you can't? This is just my life. I can't not go to work in this environment, but I can find a way to be in this environment in a different way. Maybe I can't be as open. But I think we must protect what matters most and be willing to make tough choices to protect what matters most. And I will add, you know, the path is a vehicle of protection, but it is also in the world. So it's not like it's a get out of jail free card. And also one has to work with the energy of the path in order to be protected under its tent. You have to make the choices. You can't depend on it as if it's just there as a catch-all. You have to earn that. But it can act as a protection because it has access to something not in this world. And your responsibility is to make sure that you don't clutter that connection and lose that connection and compromise that connection. And allow the world to come in such a way where it frays the edges of that connection or blurs it. And so the same way that one's higher self stays aligned, the same way that you stay connected to this tradition and this path, it applies in this broader context.